I'm Elton Banks for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Well, we open the Triangle Business Journal for this week, and on the biz page, we find about a half dozen small articles under the heading of Big Gig. Comes the article, Holt Brothers Land Job in RTP. Holt Brothers Construction of Raleigh has landed its latest in a string of high-dollar jobs, a $25 million to $30 million contract to handle the interior fit-out for the Eli Lilly and Company Development and Research Triangle Park. The job is the biggest the company has landed in its history. The company is run by two brothers, Terrence and Torrey Holt, two college football and professional players who went on to launch the firm in 2007, toward the end of their NFL careers. Among its other notable jobs, the company is also the selected builder for the North Carolina Freedom Park. Under the heading of Land Deal comes the article, Oregon Company Makes Purchase in Roanoke Valley. Springfield, Oregon-based Roseburg Forest Products purchased approximately 30,000 acres of timberland across Halifax County and Southeast Virginia, the company announced recently. The purchase makes Roseburg Forest Products the largest private timberland owner in Roanoke Valley. The company now owns 188,000 acres in the valley and 25,000 acres in Halifax County, a spokesman says. Roseburg made the purchase just months after making a big investment in Halifax County. Construction is slated to start next year on a high-tech 375,000-square-foot sawmill in Weldon that's projected to employ 137 people. The company plans to invest $200 million in the new facility. And under the heading of Wilson comes the article, TBJ Photographer Contributes to Display. At Biz, we love the growing trend of decorating local spaces with murals and other forms of art. So we were thrilled to learn that TBJ's excellent photographer, Mehmet Demirci, has some of his work in a cool exhibit in Wilson called Eyes on Main Street. The exhibit runs through March 30th. The idea is that for 150 days, 100 photos will be displayed on windows, walls, and buildings spanning 9 city blocks. Demirci's photo shows the naked cowboy who performs in New York City wearing only a pair of underwear. And under the heading of Difference Maker, Triangle Leader in Entrepreneurship Remembered. The Triangle lost a leader in entrepreneurship recently when Tom Skelton died at his home in Raleigh. Skelton had led the Triangle Investors Group and was a major driver of innovation, says co-founder's capital founder David Gardner. Tom was passionate about empowering entrepreneurs in the Triangle and was an investor in both of our co-founder's capital funds, he says. Tom always wore a smile and never hesitated to meet with and help every entrepreneur we sent his way. From the first time I met Tom, I admired him and wanted to be more like him. As we take pride in the growth and success of the Triangle startup ecosystem, let us not forget the shoulders upon which we stand. The Triangle is diminished by the loss of Tom Skelton, but he will always be much appreciated by those of us who remember him and his contributions. And on the heading, under the heading of On the Rise comes the article, Martin Marietta Hits a Milestone. Ward Nye, the CEO of Raleigh's Martin Marietta Materials since January of 2010, is one of the more quiet CEOs and not one to draw attention to himself. But his company crossed the threshold November the 2nd as its stock closed at $407.40, the first day ever over $400 a share. The Raleigh company reported third quarter earnings that day, and despite some headwinds, the jump indicates investors have confidence in Martin Marietta as the United States weighs major investments in infrastructure. The company went public on February 17, 1994, at $25.50 a share. This year, the stock opened at $284 on January the 4th. And finally, on the biz page this week, under the heading of Surging Interest, comes the article, Wake Rebels and Winning Season. If you've noticed all the Wake Forest University t-shirts and sweatshirts popping up around the triangle, you are not alone. The Deacons football team is ranked number 10 in the AP Top 25 ranking and is the only Atlantic Coast Conference team ranked in the top 25. Wake Forest surged to an 8-0 on Saturday with a home victory over Duke University, and that weekend, excited fans swarmed the Deacon Shop on campus. Honestly, on Saturday, we had lines out the door. It was insane, says Emma Draney, who works at the shop. We had to have all hands on deck. She notes that the staff had to move cash registers outside to accommodate the flood of people in the store. The Deacons are the ACC's smallest school, with an undergraduate enrollment of 5,400 students. That's only slightly larger than NC State University's freshman class of 5,030. And Wake's fan base is far smaller than many of its larger ACC rivals. But still, these are heady days for the Deacons as they head into showdowns with the University of North Carolina on November the 6th and with NC State on November the 13th. Football has an effect on the overall spirit of the university. You can feel it. Barry Faircloth, the Senior Associate Athletic Director for External Operations, told the Triad Business Journal, "The biggest thing is the overall exposure. The product has provided a tremendous value this year in exposure." Now we turn the page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we arrive at the Tech and Banking page. And under the heading of Tech Firm comes the article, California Investor Banks $6 million on local startup. A startup that counts city governments such as Raleigh and Charlotte as customers has closed on $6.1 million, according to a securities filing. Raleigh-based Public Input, an engagement platform in the government technology space, raised the equity round from a single investor, California-based Growth Street Partners. Jay Dawkins, who co-founded the firm alongside Graham Stone, says the funder will go toward growth. The team, at about 35 employees today, is adding sales staff as well as leadership roles in customer success and finance. And under the heading of financial reporting comes the article, Raleigh Firm Making Its Biggest Deal Yet. Fast-growing Raleigh financial reporting software firm Insight Software is zeroing in on yet another acquisition, its biggest yet, CEO Jim Triantafu says. Its buy of Austin, Texas-based Magnitude, an operation reporting firm, is expected to close in November. Triantafu declined to provide financials on the deal, but PENews.com pegged its value at $477 million. Insight Software was recently ranked number 21 in TBJ's Fast 50. Triantafu says Magnitude's strength is with really large companies. It partners with firms such as SAP and Oracle. Insight, on the other hand, has as its bread and butter mid-market companies. That's a great combination, he says. With the addition of Magnitude, Insight Software is at about 2,000 employees. The firm has been on Insight Software's radar for some time, with deal talks heating up over the summer. Triantafu says he and Magnitude's Boston-based CEO Jeff Sherman met up a few times, sitting outside at a restaurant near Boston Harbor, to talk about business and make it happen. Triantafu says deals take on a new dynamic in the pandemic, but whether talks are virtual or at an outdoor restaurant, it's about building trust. It's harder over Zoom, but you can still do it, he says, so you just have to have real conversations and not just high-level BS. And a lot of times that means sharing the good and the bad. And finally, on this week's Tech and Banking page, under the heading of Fresh Idea, comes the article, Wake Med Nurse Becomes Inventor to Help Babies. Karen Sang, CEO of five-year-old Raleigh startup MyCare, never set out to be an inventor, but that's what happened as she worked to solve a problem she had seen her entire career. Young children stuffed up and worried parents looking for answers in emergency rooms. Tsang, a 30-year nurse at Wake Med Health, says that in many cases the children don't need medication. The only thing helping them is a suction, she says. In hospitals, suction devices do what most devices sold over the counter can't, really relieve congestion, sucking out the gunk. But even if parents could get their hands on hospital-grade suction devices, there's a big problem. At the hospital, it takes two people, one to suction and one to hold the baby. I wanted a device that can be used by only one person at a time, Sang says. She completed her working prototype in January. The next big hurdle? Raising cash. And we turn the page in this week's journal and find the On Greater Triangle Growth. Pittsboro has an article entitled Big Mixed-Use Development Moves Forward. Another huge mixed-use development is moving forward in Pittsboro. Pittsboro Place, WEHLP, recently filed an application to rezone 212.72 acres south of the intersection of East Street and Industrial Park Drive, just a mile east of downtown Pittsboro. The development, called both Robinson Walk and Robinson's Walk in plans submitted to the town, would include up to 900 residences and 50,000 square feet of commercial space. Pittsboro Place, WEHLP, shares an address with the Hall Companies, a Maryland developer with an active presence in the Triangle. And the heading of List of Southern Pines Projects is long, comes the following article. During a recent Southern Pines Town Council meeting, Council Member Mike Saulnier wanted an update on developments happening in town. When Planning Director B.J. Grieve went to compile the list, the problem was there were too many projects to run through individually. My original idea had been to take a map and talk through all the projects we're currently working on. There just wound up being too many, Grieve said during a council work session in late October. Instead, Grieve gave a general overview of where development currently stands in Southern Pines. He first ran through how many feasibility inquiries his department has gotten this year. A feasibility inquiry is a call the town gets about a potential development project. In 2018, Grieve said Southern Pines received 72 feasibility inquiries for development projects. In 2019, that ticked up to 86, or about 1.5 a week. In 2010, that number rose precipitously to 180, or 3.5 a week. In 2021, Southern Pines is seeing an average one inquiry a day. We're at 238 year-to-date, Grieve says. That's actually at 239 because an 8-lot major subdivision came in just before I came down here. Grieve said there are 55 active projects under development in Southern Pines currently. On the residential side, that totals 1,208 apartments, 369 townhomes, and 220 single-family lots. For commercial, 706,000 square feet of institutional retail office and self-storage development is being worked on in town. Shoot, said Southern Pines Mayor Carol Haney, chuckling after the presentation, that's all I can say. And finally, under the heading of Granville County, comes the article, New Oxford Subdivision to Include Over 300 Homes. One of the nation's largest home builders is bringing more than 300 new homes to Granville County. The city of Oxford voted in October to annex 129.9 acres into the city. On the land, Texas-based LGI Homes plans to build a 302-lot subdivision off Highway 96 South called Meadows. The site's located next to the Rollingwood subdivision. Meadows is years in the making. Back in September 2018, the land was rezoned, and plans for the subdivision were approved in June of 2020. Annexing the property is the final step in order to receive city services, said the Oxford City County Agenda. According to minutes from a May 2020 Oxford Planning Board meeting, the size ranges of the homes would be from 1,500 to 2,500 square feet. Next, we turn to the real estate page, and we find under the heading of From Florida, the article, 1,000-acre project in Apex, back on track. After years of inactivity and legal wrangling, plans for a huge development in Apex appear to be back on the table. Last month, Florida-based developer Reeder Communities filed a master plan with the town for Viridia, calling for a major mixed-use destination on a 1,000-plus-acre site, long slated for mixed-use development. The project spans 1,067 acres on a sprawling site, mostly between U.S. 1 and NC 55. It has been in the works since property owner Hudson Realty Capital began assembling land 14 years ago before running into trouble with the town ordinance. Plans filed with the town and posted online don't specify the exact amount of commercial space or residential units planned for the project, but a September 25th email from Reeder Communities Senior Vice President Scott Lay to town officials says the company plans to have 4,500-plus residential units and up to 4 million square feet of non-residential space. Residential units could include apartments, condos, townhomes, and single-family detached homes, according to the message. And non-residential portions would include a variety of uses. The bulk of the property is owned by a collection of LLCs addressed to New York investment firm Hudson Realty Capital. Hudson Realty began assembling the land in 2007. To properly zone the property, Apex officials drafted a new ordinance called the Sustainable Development Conditional District, giving developers more flexibility in exchange for environmental protections and other concessions. The town ordinance required Hudson Realty Capital to designate a responsible person who would have the ability to make land use decisions for the development. The company brought on Tom Hendrickson to handle that role. Problems arose when Hendrickson's vision for the development diverged from the company's legal filing date. The company fired him as asset manager of the project in 2016, but was unable to remove him from his role with the Apex development. In 2018, Hudson Capital filed a lawsuit against Hendrickson, Lookout Ventures, and the town, claiming the project would be impossible to complete with Hendrickson in the role. The suit went on for more than a year, but Hudson was finally able to remove Hendrickson from the role of responsible person last year. And finally, a little note here on the real estate page under the heading of Downtown, the article, Charlotte Developer Joins Raleigh Project. A Charlotte developer is teaming up with HM Partners on the 865 Morgan mixed-use apartment project in downtown Raleigh, with the group buying the land earlier this month and eyeing a spring start for construction. 2 weeks ago, a firm called 865 West Morgan LLC paid $16 million for the site of the planned 401-unit 865 Morgan project, which Triangle Development developer HM Partners announced earlier this year. The LLC is addressed to Charlotte developer Childress Klein. Now we turn the page of this week's Triangle Business Journal and we land on the healthcare higher ed page. And under the heading of Big Deal comes the article, Durham MedTech completes $518 million acquisition. A Durham-based healthcare company that went public earlier this year has completed the acquisition of a New York firm and a deal valued at $518 million. Bioventus, that's B-I-O-V-E-N-T-U-S, which develops products for bone healing, bone graft, and osteoarthritis, acquired Bisonix in a cash and stock transaction. The latter is a provider of minimally invasive therapeutic ultrasonic technologies and regenerative medicine. The companies announced the acquisition in late July. Stockholders of both companies approved the transaction last month, according to a statement Bioventus released on October 26th. And under the heading of Looking to Hire comes the article, Durham Biotech Plans for Growth. And involves a company called Bioscribe Genomics. Now, I'll spell this word, B-I-O-S-K-R-Y-B. And I'll pronounce that Bioscribe with apologies if that's wrong. The heading, Durham Biotech Plans for Growth. A growing Triangle biotechnology company is setting up its new headquarters in Durham as it plans to double its workforce by the end of next year. Bioscribe Genomics, which develops genome amplification tools, began moving into a 19,500-square-foot space on Meridian Parkway in September. The space has equipment and facilities to support the company's research and development, in-house testing services, product manufacturing, and packaging and quality control. Prior to the move, the company, which was formed in 2018, operated out of a biolab space in Durham that it outgrew. The new facility provides enough space for the company of more than 20 employees to grow to about 75, co-founder and CEO Jay West says. We were bursting at the seams with people, he says. It was time to expand and create a headquarters here in Durham. According to a statement from the company, it plans to reach 50 employees by the end of 2022. It's looking to bring on genetic researchers, chemists, software engineers and developers, program managers, and quality control personnel. In addition to opening space for more employees, the new facility allows Bioscribe to grow its operations. Bioscribe operated as a technology company for the last 18 months, but is beginning to advance its commercial strategy, West says. This means hiring people to build a commercial team and marketing products to sell to generate revenue. For the company's first couple years, its focus was on developing its core assets, which are DNA amplification tools that allow its customers to better understand the genetic changes at the cellular level that drives diseases such as cancers. The company, which raised $11.5 million in seed funding in early 2020, will soon transition to becoming more application-focused. This includes developing a suite of new products that will be released next year and entering into commercial partnerships that will drive the company's growth. While West is not revealing the names of these partners, the CEO offers companies involved in cancer research as an example. And finally, on the healthcare higher ed page, under the heading of Drug Development, comes the article, Life Edit Therapeutics Acquired by Elevate Bio. After about a year of working together, a Massachusetts cell and gene therapy company has acquired a Triangle-based gene editing technology firm. Elevate Bio announced its acquisition of Life Edit Therapeutics recently in a move that will give the latter access to the former's drug development and manufacturing capabilities. Following this integration, the companies will initially focus on developing gene therapies to address neurological conditions with high unmet need. Life Edit Therapeutics was spun out of AgBiome, that's an ag tech company based in Research Triangle Park, in October of 2020. The next month, Life Edit joined Elevate Bio's portfolio of cell and gene therapy companies, while Elevate Bio executives took up management positions with Life Edit. After nearly a year of that arrangement, Elevate Bio announced on October 27th it had acquired all of AgBiome's shares of Life Edit. AgBiome continues to retain the rights for gene editing technologies outside of human therapeutics. Well, now we turn the page in this week's journal, and we land on the Executive Voice page. And this week's Executive Voice belongs to Dave Sagal. Sagal is Executive Director, Manufacturing, and Holly Springs Site Head for Sequoirus. The article is entitled, "He Leads the Fight Against the Flu." Armed with more than 25 years of life sciences industry experience, Dave Sagal joined Sequoirus in March of 2020 and has been calling the shots at its Holly Springs manufacturing facility ever since. Sequoirus is a global leader in influenza prevention, and its state-of-the-art Holly Springs site is focused on cell-based influenza vaccine production and pandemic preparedness. The facility, which employs about 800, was built in partnership with the U.S. Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. And as you know, the Executive Voice column is always a Q&A, so here are the questions and Sagal's answers. So what prepared you for this position? His answer, professional experiences that have prepared me for this role are the ones that drove me to understand the business from vastly different perspectives. These include leading the Holly Springs site quality team and drug product operations team, as well as leading the process development team at Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies. The company has secured the contract to develop the vaccines for influenza subtype H2. What does that mean for your facility and for the public? Yes. The Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, sometimes called by the acronym BARDA, selected Sequoirus to develop two influenza A virus vaccine candidates for assessment in a Phase 1 clinical study with the goal of helping to safeguard communities in the event of an influenza pandemic. This is a testament to our mission at Sequoirus to protect public health, and is anchored by the work done every day at Holly Springs to ensure we're ready to act if an influenza pandemic occurs. Under terms of the multi-year $34.95 million agreement, Sequoirus will provide clinical development services to evaluate the safety, immunogenicity, and dose-sparing capability of two influenza vaccine candidates. The first candidate will utilize a combination of cell-based and adjuvanted technologies, building on Sequoirus' highly flexible combination platform technology used by Audins, the first-ever adjuvanted cell-based influenza vaccine, which was approved by the FDA in 2020 for use in a pandemic. The second candidate will utilize Sequoirus' next-generation self-amplifying mRNA platform, which has demonstrated promise as compared to more traditional influenza vaccine technologies and preclinical research. So what does the future look like for Sequoirus in the Triangle? His answer, the future is bright for Sequoirus in the Triangle and Sequoirus around the globe. We are growing and always looking to add to our team. And there's no better place to be than the Triangle when looking for top biotech talent. As far as growth, we have an expansion in progress at the Holly Springs site that will enable us to increase capacity for formulation, fill, and finish manufacturing of cell-based and adjuvanted influenza vaccines for global markets. In addition, our site is an instrumental part of the development and commercialization of both our next-generation cell culture flu vaccines and self-amplifying mRNA vaccine platform. So what's the best piece of advice you've received? The best piece of advice from a mentor was to develop and maintain your operating principles through your personal and professional journey. You can think of an operating principle as a lesson learned, or your ways of working. I keep an updated list of my principles close to me and use them to guide my decision-making. Personally, I found them to be vitally important as you take on roles of increasing responsibility. So, what books are on? What do you do to relax? And the answer? Travel with my family, watching airplanes and listening to music. I used to be a top 40 DJ and enjoy almost every kind of music out there. Finally, what books are on your nightstand? Good to Great by Jim Collins. The Go-Giver, a little story about a powerful business idea by Bob Berg and John David Mann. And 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, The World as You've Never Seen It Before by Patricia Schultz. Now we reach this week's cover story for the journal, and it's entitled Sanford Leads Measurable Boom Along the U.S. 1 Corridor. After Chelsea and Robert Allison closed on their new home in Sanford, they found a note taped to their front door. It was chock full of useful information, names and phone numbers of neighbors, the local NC Department of Motor Vehicles location, and details about trash pickup. The Allisons, who moved in August from Panama City Beach, Florida, for his job in the HVAC industry, say they found the community they were looking for in Sanford. Our next-door neighbor brought us a tray of food, and she didn't even let it cool. She brought it over out of the oven. It was still hot, Chelsea Allison says. The Allisons aren't alone. Unlike other small communities in North Carolina, Lee County is growing. The county added over 5,400 people in the 2010s and is now home to more than 63,000 residents. The same trend is true for other areas that sit along the U.S. Highway 1 corridor. And it's that corridor, the southern tip of Wake County, Chatham County to the north, and Moore County to the south, that's added thousands of people over the last decade, with waves of others expected to come. Driving that growth along U.S. 1 is a wide variety of factors. Pinehurst, Southern Pines, and Aberdeen in Moore County, for example, are building on a legacy as a golf and retirement destination with a growing business base. But one sector that stands out along the corridor, especially for Sanford, is a life sciences industry that finds that the region provides access to the Triangle at a more affordable price. In the last 2 years, Sanford has seen major investments from life sciences company Abzena, Astellas, and Pfizer. Those investments will create hundreds of new jobs, spur residential development, and help propel this traditional manufacturing hotspot into a hub for life sciences in an area known for its small-town charm. They've just been so welcoming, Chelsea Allison says of their new neighbors. It's just been a sense of community that we haven't had anywhere else. Sanford, a city of 30,000, has a rich manufacturing history. The city was coined Brick Capital of the USA in the 50s for the amount of bricks local companies produced. Textiles and furniture were other big parts of the economy. The office's new home to the Sanford Area Growth Alliance, or SAGA, were built in 1907 to make buggies, says Jimmy Randolph, CEO of the organization. Manufacturing is still a big part of the community. As Randolph says, it makes up 30% of the local economy. That's three times higher than the U.S. as a whole. That rich history positions Sanford well as an area for life sciences companies. We're getting attention, not as much on the R&D side as you might see in Research Triangle Park or in Wake and Durham counties, but from the manufacturing aspects of the industry, he says. The onshoring that we're seeing as vulnerabilities were exposed from a supply chain standpoint as a result of COVID will continue to drive that in the years ahead as companies look at how they can bring the manufacturing of critical components of drugs and vaccines back to the U.S. I think we're uniquely positioned to take advantage of that opportunity. Many say patient zero for Sanford's life sciences sector is a site that today is home to a massive Pfizer facility. The company has played one of the biggest roles in the community's economy since its 2009 acquisition of Wyeth, which previously ran the facility in Sanford. The site was, at one point, the city's second largest employer, but then shrank to less than 500 people because of the Great Recession, Randolph says. That downward trend started to reverse in the 2010s, and in August 2019, Pfizer invested $500 million in Sanford to build a state-of-the-art gene therapy manufacturing facility. At the time, Pfizer had about 650 employees and announced that as part of the investment, 300 new employees would be brought on board. Now, a company spokesman says the Sanford site employs about 1,100 people today. Since the Pfizer expansion 2 years ago, the city has attracted two other life sciences companies that are bringing 325 and 209 jobs each to the city's Central Carolina Enterprise Park over the next few years. Don Mather has had a front-row seat to the Triangle's recent transformation into a national economic development powerhouse. Mather spent 13 years with Grifols in Clayton before coming to Astellas Gene Therapies as the site lead for the company's new manufacturing facility in Sanford. Mather was the first Sanford employee hired by Astellas, which recently rebranded from Audentis Therapeutics. The company just received its certificate of occupancy in September and is starting to move equipment into the site, Mather says. So far, the company has hired about 40 full-time employees and is targeting the second half of 2022 to start operations. When Mather came to the Triangle 14 years ago, he said the area was becoming more competitive with Boston and San Francisco in the life sciences sector. Over that time, the sector has expanded outside the Triangle's namesake. The area has transformed and grown beyond RTP, Mather says. Over these last 14 years, it's extended into other counties like Lee County. RTP has fostered some of the area's biggest life sciences and technology employers for decades. But as more companies keep coming to the area, such as Apple's 3,000 jobs, land prices have exploded across the Triangle. That was one of the main reasons why another life sciences company, Abzena, picked Sanford for a 325-job facility. According to Saga, Abzena represented Lee County's largest new site announcement in over 20 years. Obviously, everybody wants to be an RTP, but competition is fierce, particularly for headcount, says Kimball Hall, President and Chief Operating Officer of Abzena. I didn't think we would actually land in RTP. While there are compelling reasons to be there, for us to really get the resources we need, we felt like we needed to be a little bit outside so that we can build that infrastructure without the competition with all the other folks in RTP. Abzena is a contract development manufacturing organization, and the site in Sanford will help support all phases, including commercial manufacturing of biologics, particularly antibodies. The company participated in a recruitment event in October and plans to hire 20 to 25 people by the end of the year. Abzena is based in the United Kingdom and hosts its U.S. headquarters in San Diego. Hall says the company hasn't talked about moving its U.S. headquarters to North Carolina yet, but adds, I will tell you, there's a lot more interest than I had anticipated in folks that have more of the HQ-type jobs or corporate global roles that are attracted to North Carolina. One of the best arrows in Lee County's economic development quiver, and one of the primary reasons it landed Astellas and Abzena, is a program designed to spur industrial development. Industrial developers are often wary to build facilities when a tenant isn't lined up. But for companies that use industrial space, waiting 18 to 24 months for a facility to be built can be a deal-breaker. So Lee County came up with a program where it agrees to pay the lease for a spec building for up to 2 years after construction is finished, or until a tenant can be found, whichever comes first. That way, developers get a 2-year cushion to find a tenant. So far, it's worked perfectly. We have yet to spend a penny on that, Randolph says, because in both the first and second shell building, we found an end user before that agreement was triggered. Astellas and Abzina were those two companies that filled the shell buildings in Central Carolina Enterprise Park. The construction head start was key for Abzina. Hall says having the permitting already done and a shell building in place saved Abzina almost a year in getting the site up and running. The first part of the Sanford site is expected to receive validation in August or September next year, she says. There's no way we could have done that as fast without having that site ready to go, Hall says. Other counties around the Triangle are copying the strategy. Johnson County's budget passed this summer includes money for a similar program, and leaders in Chatham County are looking to start a similar program, too. Closer to the Triangle in U.S. 1, you'll find more areas of heavy investment for the life sciences industry. Fujifilm Diosynth, Amgen, and Zaquiris employ or announce plans to employ nearly 2,000 people in Holly Springs within the life sciences sector. And local economic development leaders in Chatham County are looking to land the big one. Triangle Innovation Point is North Carolina's largest megasite. The 2,150-acre site, formerly known as the Moncure Megasite, was rebranded this year as it seeks to attract life sciences companies opposed to traditional manufacturing. If a large company, especially in the life sciences industry, lands at Triangle Innovation Point, it will further cement U.S. 1's reputation as the bio corridor. On the U.S. 1 corridor, if you go from Holly Springs to Sanford, there's been an amazing amount of life science activity, both new companies coming in and expansions in the past 12 months, says Michael Smith, president of the Chatham Economic Development Corporation. But first, the site needs to find a user. The Chatham Economic Development Corporation recently unveiled an effort to bring 2,000 jobs and $500 million in capital investment to the county within 5 years. The chief goal of the effort, called Accelerate 2026, is to bring attention to the county's two megasite, Chatham's Siler City Advanced Manufacturing Site and Triangle Innovation Point. All these jobs coming to the U.S. 1 corridor are putting the squeeze on the local housing market, especially in Sanford. People are moving to the county in droves as jobs keep coming to the area or Wake County commuters seek cheaper home prices. And the onslaught of people moving to the area isn't likely to subside. Of the 1,600 new jobs pledged to Sanford in the last 24 months, more than two-thirds of them are still to come, according to SAGA. Kelly Dubois runs the residential side of the business for Adcock & Associates, a major player in Sanford's residential and commercial real estate markets. At one point this year, she had more prospective buyers for homes in Sanford who lived out of state than in North Carolina. She used her own home as an example of the red-hot market. Her family bought their house for $259,000 in 2018. Since then, they spent $50,000 finishing the basement. They recently got the home appraised for $439,000. Is she selling? I would love to sell, but then I don't know where I'd go, Dubois laughs. I look at my house, and I just can't imagine having to buy a house right now. For the Allisons, it was a long process of buying a home in Sanford. They can't keep track of how many homes they made offers on. 6 or 7, Robert Allison says, before finally landing in their home. Buying a house in North Carolina while living in Florida added to the stress. But in the end, they found both a house and a home. My advice for Sanford would be, don't second-guess it, just do it, Chelsea Allison says, when asked what she would tell people looking at moving to Sanford. This is the most content and happy we've been living somewhere. And the Triangle Business Journal has been publishing articles under the heading of 52 Shades of Success to show how diverse this area is. And this week's article is entitled A Leader's Journey. Janet Lee, owner of Zenfish Poke Bar, says the pandemic was an emotional, mental, and financial struggle. She opened three Triangle locations since 2016. The growth was fueled by the profitable success of the fast casual restaurants, but sales plummeted when the country shut down. Expenses rose, and her landlords did not offer discounted rates. The best they offered was late payments for 3 months, which had to be paid on the fourth month, Lee says. It was scary to promise we'd pay all of it at once when many customers were scared to come for takeout. The fridges still had to operate, and we were paying thousands of dollars a month in utility costs. She pivoted and personally began delivering all over the Triangle from Wendell to Raleigh. It took hours. I had no idea how huge Raleigh was. Driving from one drop to another could take 30 minutes, she says. But Lee's commitment to sustainability, fairness, and value never wavered. At the restaurants, everything is compostable, and everyone is treated with respect and kindness, she adds. What I wanted for my business was an inclusive community where we also focus on mental health. We want this to be a safe space, and our team is super diverse. Our people come from all walks of life. The sous chef is a Syrian refugee, and we have young girls from picturesque family settings, Lee says. Although she's contemplating franchising as a growth channel, she hasn't found partners with comparable values. I'd rather not grow than hurt the brand. This is more than just a pokey restaurant. It's my passion, she explains, adding that she left a corporate job intent on creating a safe, healthy environment. My last job was in a very toxic, male-dominated environment, and it hurt my mental health, Lee says. Her mission is for Zenfish to create support, not add stress. An example is how she's dealt with the financial challenges of the pandemic. She tried third-party delivery services such as Grubhub and Uber Eats, but the cost of those services ate into Zenfish's already eroding margins, where food costs were up almost 44%. Not including overhead and labor, we were barely making 50 cents a bowl, Lee says. On top of that, team members wanted to work, but I had to cut hours. Her solution? She gave the team a raise to offset reduced hours since their earnings, which had been largely tip-based pre-pandemic, were also reduced because takeout orders rarely included tips. Since 2020, the price of bowls at Zenfish increased 75 cents, negligible compared to the cost of doing business amid supply chain disruptions and shortages. In the 4 years prior, Lee had raised the price of bowls a total of 50 cents. The pandemic took me to a different low, she says. I was having to explain myself and price increases to so many customers and trying to keep that positive energy to keep the restaurant safe and happy, to be the person to keep it all together. Zenfish has 37 employees across its three locations and didn't lay off anyone during the pandemic. A Paycheck Protection Program loan of $81,756 was awarded in April. The restaurants have extremely low turnover, particularly in the labor-strapped quick-service industry, largely because of the perks that Lee extends to her team. This includes bowling trips and once treating her management team to a vacation in Hawaii. Her suggestion to the Triangle to support the Asian-American community? Shop local, eat Asian. For us, a $20 gift card helps keep our doors open. And we come to the end of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find the viewpoint page. As you know, this page always has the editor's notebook and a guest column. This week's editor's notebook is entitled, Could Outlying Communities Be the Housing Answer? A report released by Chris Salviati of ApartmentList.com in the past several days concludes that rental rates in Raleigh have gone up some 23% in the past year. While Durham, Chapel Hill, and other Wake County towns have not seen this dramatic upswing, rents are considerably up in these communities as well. For example, median rents in Raleigh clocked in at $1,347 for a one-bedroom apartment, $1,542 for a two-bedroom. Overall, in North Carolina, rents are up about 20% compared to rents being up about 15% nationally. So what do people relocating to Raleigh do? Do they ask their employers for more money? Do they think things will balance out and they will save money on gas if they live closer to the urban core? Or do they think the overall cost locally is still fairly reasonable, given expenses in larger cities such as New York, San Francisco, and Chicago? An analysis by online research portal GoBankingReach.com looked at how far a salary of $100,000 travels in different cities. For the Raleigh MSA, the report said a person will have about $31,000 left over annually after paying federal, state, and local taxes, groceries, rent, utilities, health care, and driving costs. That 31K number is a pipe dream, really, given we are paying more than $3 for gas, and the study apportions $17,500 for rent, which really is close to $20,000 these days. For comparison purposes, in New York, Boston, and other big cities, income left over after paying monthly expenses is not that different. But for the sake of argument, let's say a person making $100,000 can still have about $24,000 as disposable income. Now, read this week's cover story written by reporter Evan Hoopfer on towns that run along the U.S. corridor. Towns in Lee and Moore counties are anywhere from 20 to 50 minutes away from Apex and Holly Springs in Wake County. Rental rates in Lee are running at about $1,000 for a two-bedroom apartment, which is more than 25% cheaper than Wake. Moore is a little more expensive, primarily because of supply issues and overall socioeconomic makeup. If companies are still shy about forcing workers to come to work, and instead are relying on a remote or hybrid work model, a family can save far more money today by living in Lee and neighboring counties and commuting to Wake and Durham counties once or twice a week for work. Of course, the issue remains amenities. Without a doubt, Wake, Durham, and Orange counties have more quality of life amenities to offer. But really, exactly how many times a week is a person earning $100,000 going out eating, drinking, and shopping, given the escalating prices? Having options open to live west, southwest, north, and east of the triangle does not have to be a permanent solution. Most people looking to buy homes in Raleigh at prices far above appraised value of homes would be better off renting homes on a temporary basis and letting the market and the economy settle down before buying their permanent or forever home. Companies are still figuring out their work from home and back to office strategies, and most likely other economic disruptions will occur in 2022 as well. Hoopfer's piece offers a valuable option for people looking to stretch their dollars in the short run. The guest article this week is written by Ben Coulter. Coulter is chancellor of WGU North Carolina and Southeast Regional Director for online nonprofit Western Governors University. His article is entitled, "Cybersecurity is a Great Career for Military Veterans." America is fighting a war on an invisible front, and we need skilled and motivated professionals to protect us. Experts predict that global cybercrime damages will reach $6 trillion in 2021. That's nearly double the amount from 2015. October was Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a great time to educate employees about the dangers of cyber attacks and to spotlight the growing field of cybersecurity. Whether perpetrated by cyber criminals, activist groups, or state-sponsored hackers, cyber attacks have the potential to disrupt private and public organizations, including banks, healthcare systems, local governments, and vital infrastructure. As chancellor of WGU North Carolina, a state affiliate of Western Governors University, I've observed that more than 30% of students currently pursuing bachelor's or master's degree in cybersecurity and information assurance with our College of Information Technology are affiliated with the military community. Cybersecurity is a great career choice for military veterans, and here are five reasons why. One, cybersecurity is a growing field. The U.S. Department of Labor Statistics Information Security Analyst Outlook expects cybersecurity jobs will grow 31% through 2029. Meanwhile, according to the New York Times, military veterans are 37% more likely to be underemployed than non-veterans. According to CyberSeek, there are currently 17,660 cybersecurity job openings in North Carolina. Reason 2. Veterans have experience working with state-of-the-art technology. The U.S. military employs some of the best, most sophisticated technologies in the world. Servicemen and women are exposed to high-tech equipment, systems, and programs on a regular basis. Further, many participate in usability testing of experimental technologies. Reason 3. It's a mission-driven profession and another way to serve our country. The purpose of cybersecurity is to secure data and prevent unauthorized access from bad actors seeking to inflict damage or extort money to fund even more nefarious incursions. The objectives are very clear and precise, which may appeal to individuals with military experience. Region 4. There's a clear career progression. Just like with military promotions, the cybersecurity industry typically has a defined career track, albeit with some flexibility. For instance, an entry-level cybersecurity specialist could be promoted to analyst, consultant, or penetration and vulnerability tester, and then on to a role as a cybersecurity manager, engineer, or architect. Veterans have many of the qualities and skills that cybersecurity employers desire: integrity, work ethic, discipline, threat analysis, and attention to detail. Combined with the right educational degrees and certifications, they are well suited for careers that directly apply and reward those qualities. There are myriad scholarship and grant programs to help veterans pay for their education. As a veteran of the U.S. Army, I was a beneficiary of the GI Bill and used it to earn a master's degree from Western Carolina University and a doctorate from North Carolina State University. For those transitioning out of the military, or for veterans who are years removed from their service but considering a career change, the cybersecurity field offers a rewarding opportunity for purpose-driven job satisfaction and the ability to counter threats from both home and abroad. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once again, that number, 919-832-5138. So long till next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.